existence has been attested to by credible witnesses in the House. And the only reason we don't already have them is that the president has ordered his administration, including Secretary Pompeo, to hide them. The president's lawyers may suggest that the House should have sought these materials in court or awaited further lawsuits under the Freedom of Information Act, aka FOIA lawsuits. Any such suggestion is meritless. To start, the Constitution has never been understood to require such lawsuits, which has never occurred. It's never occurred in any previous impeachment. Moreover, the president has repeatedly and strenuously argued that the House is not even allowed to file a suit to enforce its subpoenas. And in the Freedom of Information Act cases, the administration has only grudgingly and slowly produced an extremely small set of materials, but has insisted on applying heavy and dubious redactions.
Live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald Trump on KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno, K248BR 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz. This is Democratic Representative Val Demings.
The administration has produced more documents pursuant to the Federal Office of Information Act lawsuits by private citizens and entities than congressional subpoenas. Finally, as we all know, litigation would take an extremely long time, likely years, not weeks or months, while the misconduct of this president requires immediate attention. The misconduct of this president requires immediate attention if this body is truly committed to a fair trial. It cannot let the president play a game of keep away and dictate what evidence the senators can and cannot see bearing on his guilt or innocence. This body cannot permit him to hide all the evidence while disingenuously insisting on lawsuits that he doesn't actually think we can file. Ones that he knows won't be resolved until after the election he is trying to cheat to win. Instead, to honor your oaths to do impartial justice, we urge each senator to support a subpoena to the State Department. And that subpoena should be issued now, at the beginning of the trial rather than at the end, so these documents can be reviewed and their importance weighed by the parties, the Senate, and by the American people. That is how things work in every courtroom in the nation, and it is how they should work here, especially because the stakes, as you all know, are so high. The truth is there. Facts are stubborn things. The president is trying to hide it. This body should not surrender to his obstruction by refusing to demand a full record. That is why the House managers support this amendment. And Mr. Chief Justice, the House managers reserve the balance of our time.
That's Democratic Representative Val Demings of Florida, serving as one of seven House floor managers in the Senate trial of
Mr. Chief Justice.
President Donald Trump. We now get the rebuttal. And again, this debate right now is about Chuck Schumer's amendment to the rules that would call for subpoena, for issuing subpoenas for documents from the State Department. Now we get the rebuttal from Trump's defense team by Pat Cipollone, who is the White House counsel.
The House manager said, we're not asking you to do our jobs for us. And Mr. Schiff came up here and he said, I call Ambassador Bolton. Remember Paul Harvey? It's time for the rest of the story. He didn't call him in the House. He didn't subpoena Ambassador Bolton in the House. I have a letter here from Ambassador Bolton's lawyer. He's the same lawyer that Charlie Kupperman hired. It's dated November 8th. He said, I write as counsel to Dr. Charles Kupperman and to Ambassador John Bolton. In response to one, to the letter of November 5th from Chairman Schiff, Chairman Engel, and Acting Chair Maloney, the House chairs, withdrawing the subpoena to Dr. Kupperman. I mentioned that earlier. And to recent published reports announcing that the House chairs do not intend to issue a subpoena to Ambassador Bolton. He goes on and says, we are dismayed that the committees have chosen not to join us in seeking resolution from the judicial branch of this momentous constitutional question. And he ends the letter by saying, if the House chooses not to pursue through subpoena the testimony of Dr. Kupperman and Ambassador Bolton, let the record be clear. That is the House's decision, and they made that decision. They never subpoenaed Ambassador Bolton. They didn't try to call him in the House, and they withdrew the subpoena for Charles Kupperman before the judge could rule, and they asked that the case be mooted. And now they come here, and they ask you to issue a subpoena for John Bolton. It's not right. I yield the remainder of my time to Mr. Sekulow.
And Jay Sekulow is Donald Trump's personal attorney.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Senate, the manager said facts are a stubborn thing. Let me give you some facts. It's from the transcripts. Ambassador Sondland actually testified unequivocally that the president did not tie aid to investigations. Instead, that he acknowledged any leak he had suggested was based entirely on his own speculation, unconnected to any conversation with the president. Here's the question. What about the aid? Ambassador Volker says that they were tied, that the aid was not tied. Answer, I didn't say that they were conclusively tied either. I said I was presuming it. Question. Okay. And so the president never told you they were tied. Answer. That is correct. Question. So your testimony and Ambassador Volker's testimony is consistent. And the president did not tie investigations, aid to investigations. Answer. That is correct. Ambassador Sondland also testified that he asked President Trump directly about these issues. And the president explicitly told them that he did not want anything from Ukraine. I want nothing. I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo. Tell Zelensky to do the right thing. Similar comments were made to Senator Johnson. Those are the facts. Stubborn, but that's the facts. No one is above the law. Here's the law. As every member of Congress knows, undoubtedly aware, separate from even state secret privileges is the presidential communication executive privilege to communications and performance of a president's responsibilities. The presidential communication privilege has constitutional origins. Courts have recognized a great public interest in preserving the confidentiality of conversations that take place in the president's performance of official duties because such confidentiality is needed to protect the effectiveness of the executive decision-making process. In Ray Seal cases, that was decided in the District of Columbia Court of Appeals. The Supreme Court found such a privilege necessary to guarantee the candor of presidential advisors and to provide a president and those who assist him with freedom to explore alternatives in the process of ultimately shaping policies and making decisions, and to do so in a way many would be unwilling to express except in private. For these reasons, presidential conversations are presumptively privileged. There's something else about this privilege. Communications made by presidential advisors, again, quoting courts. And by the way, lawsuits? We're talking about the impeachment of a president of the United States, duly elected. And the members, the managers are complaining about lawyer lawsuits? The Constitution allows lawyer lawsuits. It's disrespecting the Constitution of the United States to even say that in this chamber. Lawyer lawsuits. Here's the law. Communications made by presidential advisors in the course of preparing advice for the president come under the presidential communications privilege, even when these communications are not made directly to the president. Even when they're not made directly to the president, advisor to advisor. Given the need to provide sufficient elbow room for advisors to obtain information from all knowledgeable sources, the privilege must apply both to communications which these advisors solicit and receive from others, as well as those they authorize themselves. The privilege must also extend to communications authored or received in response to solicitations by members of a presidential advisor staff, since in many instances, advisors must rely on their staffs to investigate an issue and formulate advice given to the president. Lawsuits. The Constitution. A dangerous moment for America when an impeachment of a president of the United States is being rushed through because of lawyer lawsuits. The Constitution allows it if necessary. The Constitution demands it if necessary. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Mrs. Demings, you have 13 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Schiff.
We now turn to Adam Schiff, who is the lead impeachment manager.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Let me just respond to some of my colleagues' points, if I can. First, counsel said, well, the House would like to call John Bolton, but the House did not seek his testimony during its investigation. Well, first of all, we did. We invited John Bolton to testify, and you know what he told us? I'm not coming, and if you subpoena me, I will sue you. That was his answer. I will sue you. Mr. Bolton is represented by the same lawyer who represents Dr. Kupperman, who actually did sue us when he was subpoenaed. So we knew that John Bolton would make good on that threat. Now, Mr. Sekulow says something about lawyer lawsuits. Now, I have to confess I wasn't completely following the argument. But something about lawyer lawsuits, that we're against lawyer lawsuits. Well, I don't know what that means, but I can tell you this. The Trump Justice Department is in court in that case and in other cases arguing Congress cannot go to court to enforce its subpoenas. So when they say something about lawyer lawsuits and they say there's nothing wrong with the House suing to get these witnesses to show up and they should have sued to get them to show up, their own other lawyers are in court saying the House has no such right. They're in court saying you can't have lawyer lawsuits. So that argument cannot be made in both directions. What's more, in the Kupperman litigation, in the McGahn litigation, which tested the same bogus theory of absolute immunity, in that lawsuit, once again, involving the president's lawyer, Don McGahn, the one who was told to fire the special counsel and then to lie about it, that lawsuit, to get his testimony. Judge Jackson ruled on that very recently when they made the same bogus claim. He's absolutely immune from showing up. And the judge says that's nonsense. There's no support for that, none in the Constitution, none in the case law. That is made out of whole cloth. But you know, the judge said something more that was very interesting. Because what we urge John Bolton's lawyer is, you don't need to file a lawsuit. Dr. Kupperman, you don't need to file a lawsuit. There's one already filed involving Don McGahn that's about to be decided. So unless your real purpose here is delay, unless your real purpose here is to avoid testimony and you just wish to give the impression of a willingness to come forward, you just want to have the court's blessing, if that's really true, agree to be bound by the McGahn decision. Well, of course they were not willing, because they didn't want to testify. Now, for whatever reason, John Bolton is now willing to testify. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because he has a book coming out. Maybe it's because it will be very hard to explain why he was unwilling to share important information with the Senate, that he couldn't show up for a House deposition or interview because he would need court permission to do it, but he can put it in a book. I don't know. I can't speak to his motivation. But I can tell you he's willing to come now, if you're willing to hear him. But of course, they weren't willing to be bound by that court decision in McGahn. But the court said something very interesting, because one of the arguments they had been making, one of the arguments that John Bolton's lawyer had been making as to why they needed their own separate litigation was, well, John Bolton and Dr. Kupperman, they're national security people, and Don McGahn is just the White House counsel. No offense to the White House counsel, but apparently you have nothing to do with national security. And so they couldn't be bound by what the court in the McGahn case said. Well, the judge in the McGahn case said, this applies to national security stuff too. So we do have a court decision, and what's more, we have the court decision in the Harriet Myers case in the George W. Bush administration, where likewise the court made short shrift of this claim of absolute, complete, and total immunity. Now, there were also comments made about Ambassador Volker's testimony by Mr. Sekulow. And it was along these lines. Ambassador Volker said the president never told him that the aid was being conditioned or the meeting was being conditioned on Ukraine doing these sham investigations. So, well, I guess that's case closed. Unless the president told everyone, called him into their office and said, hey, I'm going to tell you now, and then I'm going to tell you now. If he didn't tell everyone, I guess it's case closed. Well, you know who the president did tell, among others? He told Mick Mulvaney. Mick Mulvaney went out on national television and said, yes, they discussed it. This investigation, this Russian narrative that it wasn't Ukraine that intervened in 2016, it was Russia. I'm sorry, it wasn't Russia, it was Ukraine. Yes, that bogus 2016 theory, yes, they discussed it. Yes, that was part of the reason why they withheld the money. And when reporters said, well, you're kind of describing a quid pro quo, his answer was, yeah, get used to it or get over it. We do it all the time. Now, they haven't said they want to hear from Mick Mulvaney. I wonder why. The president did talk to Mick Mulvaney about it. Wouldn't you like to hear what Mick Mulvaney has to say? I mean, if you really want to get to the bottom of this, if they're really challenging the fact that the president conditioned $400 million of military aid to an ally at war, if Mick Mulvaney has already said publicly that he talked to the president about it and this is part of the reason why, don't you think you should hear from him? Don't you think impartial justice requires you to hear from him? Now, counsel also referred to Ambassador Sondland and Sondland saying, well, the president told me there was no quid pro quo. Now, of course, at the time the president said to Sondland, no quid pro quo, he became aware of the whistleblower complaint, presumably by Mr. Cipollone. And so the president knew that this was going to come to light on the advice, apparently, of Mr. Cipollone, or maybe others. The director of national intelligence, for the first time in history, withheld a whistleblower complaint from Congress, its intended recipient. But nonetheless, the White House was aware of that complaint. We launched our own investigations. Yes, they got caught. And in the midst of being caught, what does he say? It's called a false exculpatory. For those people at home, that's a fancy word of saying it's a false, phony alibi. No quid pro quo. He wasn't even asked the question, was there a quid pro quo? He just blurted it out. That's the defense, that the president denies it. And what's more interestingly, he didn't tell you about the other half of that conversation where the president says no quid pro quo. He says no quid pro quo. But Zelensky needs to go to the mic. And he should want to do it. Which is the equivalent of saying no quid pro quo except the quid pro quo. And here's what the quid pro quo is. He needs to go to the mic and he should want to do it. That's their alibi. They didn't also mention, of course, and you'll hear about this during the trial, if we have a real trial. Ambassador Sondland also said that we're often asked, was there a quid pro quo? The answer is yes, there was a quid pro quo. There was an absolute quid pro quo. And what's more, when it came to the military aid, it was as simple as 2 plus 2. Well, I'll tell you something. We're not the only people who can add up 2 plus 2. There are millions of people watching this can add up 2 plus 2 also. When the president tells his chief of staff, we're holding up the aid because of this, as the chief of staff admitted. When the president gives no plausible or other explanation for holding up aid that you all and we all supported and voted on a very bipartisan way, has no explanation for it. When in that call he never brings up corruption except the corruption he wants to bring about. It doesn't take a genius. It doesn't take Albert Einstein to add 2 plus 2. It equals 4. In this case, it equals guilt. Now, you're going to have 16 hours to ask questions. You're going to have 16 hours. That's a long time to ask questions. Wouldn't you like to be able to ask about the documents in that 16 hours? Would you like to be able to say, counsel for the president, what did Mick Mulvaney mean when he emailed so-and-so and said such-and-such? What's your explanation for that? Because that seems to be pretty damning evidence of exactly what the House is saying here. What's your explanation, Mr. Sekulow? What's your explanation? Wouldn't you like to be able to ask about the documents? Or ask the House, Mr. Schiff, what about this text message? Doesn't that suggest such is what the president is arguing? Wouldn't you like to be able to ask me that question or my colleagues? I think you would. I think you should. But the backwards way this resolution is drafted, you get 16 hours to ask questions about documents you've never seen. And then you know what's more? If you do decide at that point after the trial is essentially over that you do want to see the documents after all, and the documents are produced, you don't get another 16 hours. You don't get 16 minutes. You don't get 16 seconds to ask about those documents. Does that make any sense to you? Does that make any sense at all? I'll tell you something I'd like to know that may be in the documents. You probably heard about, you hear more about the three amigos. My colleagues mentioned two of the three amigos, Amigo Volker and Amigo Sondland. These are two of the three people that the president put in charge of Ukraine policy. The third amigo is Secretary Rick Perry, the former Secretary of Energy. Well, we know from Amigo Sondland's testimony that he was certainly in the loop and knew exactly all about this scheme. And we know from Ambassador Volker's testimony and his text messages and his WhatsApps that amigo was in the loop. What about the third amigo? Wouldn't you like to know if the third amigo was in the loop? Now, as my colleagues will explain, when we get to the Department of Energy records, that, well, surprisingly, we didn't get those either. But any communication between the Department of Energy and the Department of State is covered by this amendment. Wouldn't you like to know? Don't you think the American people have a right to know what the third amigo knew about this scheme? I'd like to know. I think you should be able to ask questions about it in your 16 hours. At the end of the day, I guess I'll finish with something Mr. Sekulow said. He said, this was a dangerous moment because we're trying to rush through this somehow. It is a dangerous moment, but we're not trying to rush through this trial. We're actually trying to have a real trial here. It's the president that's trying to rush through this. And I have to tell you that whatever you decide here, maybe this is wasted breath and maybe it's already decided, but whatever you decide here, I don't know who the next president is going to be. Maybe it'll be someone in this chamber. But I guarantee you this, whoever that next president is, whether they did something right or they did something wrong, there's going to come a time where you and this body are going to want to subpoena that president and that administration. You're going to want to get to the bottom of serious allegations. Are you prepared to say that that president can simply say, I'm going to fight all subpoenas? Are you prepared to say and accept that president saying, I have absolute immunity. You want me to come testify? Senator, you want me to come and testify? No. I have absolute immunity. You can subpoena me all you like. I'll see you in court. And when you get to court, I'm going to tell you, you can't see me in court. Are you prepared for that? That's what the future looks like. Don't think this is the last president, if you allow this to happen, that's going to allow this to take place.
Your time is expired. Mr. Justice,
I yield back. I thank you.
Representative Adam Schiff.
The majority leader is recognized.
To table the amendment.
Senator
Mitch
McConnell.
Question is on the motion to table.
And I ask for the ayes and nays.
Is there a sufficient second? There is. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Alexander.
Aye.
Ms. Baldwin.
And with that, the Senate is now voting on whether or not to table a second amendment from
Blackburn.
Democratic Representative Charles
Mr. Blumenthal.
Schumer
Mr. Blunt.
As to whether or not documents Booker. Should be subpoenaed from the State Department right here
Mr.
at
Boseman.
The beginning of the trial. To table it means basically to put it under the table, and or in other words, put it off the table and not consider it anymore. So if there are a majority of votes for tabling the measure, that means it won't go further anymore. That means it won't be adopted. The previous measure brought by Charles Schumer, I'm thinking of Charles Sumner, the great senator from Massachusetts, the radical Republican. Chuck Schumer, late in the day, Chuck Schumer, his previous amendment was tabled by a 53-47 vote. What was on party lines, likely that will occur here as well. After this, we'll see if Senator Schumer will bring additional amendments to the resolution for the rules concerning the Senate trial that will begin in earnest tomorrow with oral arguments, both from the House Democrat floor managers and also from Donald Trump's defense team.
Ms. Ernst.
I would have to say there have been slight victories for Democrats in today's proceedings. While none of their amendments have been adopted, Mitch McConnell, the Republican majority leader, has relented on the severity of some of his rules that were originally proposed last night, including adding an additional day to make it 3 days that both the floor managers for the Democrats from the House of Representatives and the defense team would have 3 days to use 24 hours of time to make their arguments rather than 2 days, in which each side would have to use 12 hours of oral arguments each day. So add an additional day for each side, and that will be reduced to 8 hours a day. So that was, I think, a significant victory for Democrats, something they objected to. Another victory that they will have is that Mitch McConnell amended his resolution in order to allow evidence that had been gathered by the House impeachment inquiry to be part of the Senate record right from the get-go. Previously, Mitch McConnell said that that evidence would not be a part of the record anyways, the official record of the Senate. And the Senate wouldn't even vote on whether or not to allow that evidence to be included until the oral arguments and questions from senators had already passed. Now, this amendment that they're voting on, because you just heard a lot about the need to be able to subpoena documents, is for additional subpoenas, additional information that the Democrats would like to be presented to subpoena documents that the White House withheld during the House impeachment inquiry. And the White House was successful in that, actually didn't give over any documents during that. Now, some documents have been put out there. Some journalists have obtained documents from FOIA requests. Center for Public Integrity got the emails between the Department of Defense and the Office of Management and Budget, which controls the funds. And through that, in getting those documents, found that the Department of Defense was quite worried about potentially breaking the law by breaking what's known as the Impoundment Control Act of 1974. This was an act that was really forced on Richard Nixon in his final weeks in office, as Richard Nixon was probably reading the tea leaves as to potentially being impeached. And he signed this act even though he didn't want to. It was forced on him because he and even previous presidents didn't always fulfill all the spending requirements that the that Congress approved or appropriated for. And so they brought this Impoundment Control Act that says you have to spend all the money that's been appropriated towards a program unless you find programmatic problems. Well, the Government Accountability Office investigated this very issue concerning the military aid to Ukraine and found there weren't programmatic problems, but that it was halted for policy reasons. Hence, it was against the law. And that is what the Government Accountability Office found. That information, as of now, has not been submitted officially into the Senate. Not that I know of, anyways. I probably have to do a careful reading of how Mitch McConnell has amended his own resolution. Sounds like the roll call vote has finished. Usually these votes can take some 30 minutes to occur, but that's because usually you don't have all 100 senators in the Senate chamber as you do now. Which actually speeds up the process quickly. You only have to go through the roll call of 100 senators once. The clerk is now tallying the votes, and in any moment here is going to take it to Chief Justice John Roberts, who is presiding over the trial of Donald Trump. We should hear that here shortly. Afterwards, we'll see if Schumer has more amendments or if we'll move to a final vote on the resolution on rules.
Change their vote? If not, the yeas are 53, the nays 47. The motion to table is agreed to. The Democratic leader is recognized.
Mr. Chief Justice, I send an amendment to the desk to subpoena certain office and management and budget documents, and I ask that it be read.
The clerk will read the amendment.
So there will be another amendment in which they likely will also take another hour to debate. This is to get documents from the Office of Management and Budget, what we were just talking about. This is the clerk reading the language of the amendment.
Insert the following. Section, notwithstanding any other provision of this resolution pursuant to Rules 5 and 6 of the Rules of Procedure and Practice in the Senate when sitting on impeachment trials, 1, the Chief Justice of the United States, through the Secretary of the Senate, shall issue a subpoena to the Acting Director of the Office of Management and Budget, commanding him to produce for the time period from January 1, 2019, to the present, all documents, communications, and other records within the possession, custody, or control of the Office of Management and Budget, referring or relating to A, the actual or potential suspension, withholding, delaying, freezing, or releasing of United States foreign assistance, military assistance, or security assistance of any kind to Ukraine, including but not limited to the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, referred to in this section as USAI, and foreign military financing, referred to in this section as FMF, including but not limited to 1, communications among, between, or referring to Director Michael John Mick Mulvaney, Assistant to the President Robert Blair, Acting Director Russell Vaught, Associate Director Michael Duffy, or any other Office of Management and Budget employee. 2, communications related to requests by President Trump for information about Ukraine security or military assistance and responses to those requests. 3, communications related to concerns raised by any Office of Management and Budget employee related to the legality of any hold on foreign assistance, military assistance, or security assistance to Ukraine. 4, communications sent to the Department of State regarding a hold or block on congressional notifications regarding the release of FMF funds to Ukraine. 5, communications between 1, officials at the Department of Defense, including but not limited to Undersecretary of Defense Elaine McCusker, and 2, Associate Director Michael Duffy, Deputy Associate Director Mark Sandy, or any other Office of Management and Budget employee. 6, all draft and final versions of the August 7th, 2019 memorandum prepared by the National Security Division, International Affairs Division, and Office of General Counsel of the Office of Management and Budget about the release of foreign assistance, or security assistance to Ukraine. 7, the Ukrainian government's knowledge prior to August 28, 2019, of any actual or potential suspension, withholding, delaying, freezing, or releasing of United States foreign assistance, military assistance, or security assistance to Ukraine, including all meetings, calls, or other engagement with Ukrainian officials regarding potential or actual suspensions, holds, or delays in United States assistance to Ukraine. B, communications, opinions, advice, counsel, approvals, or concurrences provided by any employee in the Office of Management and Budget regarding the actual or potential suspension, withholding, delaying, freezing, or releasing of security assistance to Ukraine, including legality under the Impoundment Control Act. C, Associate Director Michael Duffy taking over duties related to apportionments of USAI FMF from Deputy Associate Director Mark Sandy or any other Office of Management and Budget employee. D, all meetings related to the security assistance to Ukraine, including but not limited to interagency meetings on July 18, 2019, July 23, 2019, July 26, 2019, and July 31, 2019, including any directions provided to staff participating in those meetings and any readouts from those meetings. E, the decision announced on or about September 11, 2019, to release appropriated foreign assistance, military assistance, or security assistance to Ukraine, including but not limited to any notes, memoranda, documentation, or correspondence related to the decision. F, all draft and final versions of talking points related to the withholding or release of foreign assistance, military assistance, or security assistance to Ukraine, including communications with the Department of Defense related to concerns about the accuracy of the talking points, and G, all meetings and calls between President Trump and the President of Ukraine, including documents, communications, and other records related to the scheduling of, preparation for, and follow-up from the President's April 21st and July 25th, 2019 telephone calls, as well as the President's September 25th, 2019 meeting with the President of Ukraine in New York, and 2, the Sergeant-at-Arms is authorized to utilize the services of the Deputy Sergeant-at-Arms or any other employee of the Senate in serving the subpoena authorized to be issued by this section.
As the clerk reading Chief Justice, the amendment, Majority this is Mitch McConnell.
First, a scheduling note. As the parties are ready to debate this amendment, I suggest we go ahead, get through the debate, and vote before we take a 30-minute recess for dinner. And I would remind everyone that I'll be moving to table the amendment, and it's also important to remember that both evidence and witnesses are addressed in the underlying resolution.
Thank you. The amendment is arguable by the parties for 2 hours, equally divided. Mr. Manager Schiff, are you a proponent or opponent of the motion?
Proponent.
Mr. Cipollone, are you a proponent or opponent? Then, Mr. Schiff, your side will proceed first, and you will be able to reserve time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Before I begin, Mr. Chief Justice,
this is Democratic Representative Jason Crow
for the President
of Colorado, one of the seven
Mr. Chief
managers
Justice, Senators,
for the House.
Counsel for the President and the American people. I am Jason Crow from the great state of Colorado. The House managers strongly support this amendment to subpoena key documents from the Office of Management and Budget, or OMB. These documents go directly to one of President Trump's abuses of power, his decision to withhold vital military aid from a strategic partner that's at war to benefit his own personal reelection campaign. But why should that matter? Why should anybody care? Why should I care? Before I was a member of Congress, I was an American soldier, serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. And although some years have passed since that time, there are still some memories that are seared in my brain. One of those memories was scavenging scrap metal on the streets of Baghdad in the summer of 2003 that we had to bolt onto the side of our trucks because we had no armor to protect against roadside bombs. So when we talk about troops not getting the equipment that they need when they need it, it's personal to me. To be clear, here we are talking of $391 million of taxpayer money intended to protect our national security by helping our strategic partner, Ukraine, fight against Vladimir Putin's Russia, an adversary of the United States. But the president could not carry out this scheme alone. He needed a lot of people to help him. And that's why we know as much about it as we do today. But there is much more to know. And that's what trials are for, to get the full picture. We know there's more because President Trump needed the Office of Management and Budget to figure out how to stop what should have been a routine release of funds mandated by Congress. A release of funds that was already underway. But the people in this chamber don't need me to tell you that, because 87 of you in this room voted for those vital funds to support our partner, Ukraine. Witnesses before the House testified extensively about OMB's involvement in carrying out the hold. It was OMB that relayed the president's instructions and implemented the hold. And it was OMB that scrambled to justify the freeze. OMB has key documents that President Trump has refused to turn over to Congress. It is time to subpoena those documents. These documents would provide insight into critical aspects of the military aid hold. They would show the decision-making process and motivations behind President Trump's freeze. They would reveal the concerns expressed by career OMB officials, including lawyers, that the hold was violating the law. They would expose the lengths to which OMB went to justify the president's hold. They would reveal concerns about the impact of the freeze on Ukraine and U.S. national security. And they would show that senior officials repeatedly attempted to convince President Trump to release the hold. In short, they would show exactly how the president carried out the scheme to use our national defense funds to benefit his personal political campaign. We are not speculating about the existence of these documents. We are not guessing what the documents might show. During the course of the investigation in the House, witnesses who testified before the committees identified multiple documents directly relevant to the impeachment inquiry that OMB continues to hold to this day. We know these documents exist, and we know that the only reason we do not have them is because the president directed OMB not to produce them, because he knows what they would show. To demonstrate the significance of the OMB documents and the value they would provide in this trial, I would like to walk you through some of what we know exists, but which the Trump administration has refused to turn over. As we have discussed, the Trump administration has refused to turn over any documents to the House in response to multiple subpoenas and requests. Based on what is known from the testimony and the few documents that have been obtained through public reporting and lawsuits, it's clear that the president is trying to hide this evidence because he is afraid of what it would show. The documents offer stark examples of the chaos and confusion that the president's scheme set off across our government, and they make clear the importance of the documents that are still being concealed by the president. We know that OMB has documents that reveal that as early as June, the president was considering holding military aid for Ukraine. The president began questioning military aid to Ukraine after Congress appropriated and authorized the money. $250 million in DOD funds and $141 million in State Department funds. This funding had wide bipartisan support because, as many witnesses testified, providing military aid to Ukraine to defend itself against Russian aggression also benefits our own national security. Importantly, the president's questions came weeks after the Department of Defense already certified that Ukraine had undertaken the anti-corruption reforms and other measures mandated by Congress as a condition for receiving that aid. So there is a process for making sure that the funds make it to the right place and to the right people, a process that has been followed every year that we have been providing that security assistance to Ukraine, including the first 2 years under the Trump administration. Nonetheless, the president's questions came days after DOD issued a press release on June 18th, announcing it would provide its $250 million portion of the taxpayer-funded military aid to Ukraine. According to public reporting, the day after DOD's press release, a White House official named Robert Blair called OMB's acting director, Russell Vought, to talk about the military aid to Ukraine. According to public reports, Mr. Blair told Vought, quote, "We need to hold it up." OMB has refused to produce any documents related to this conversation. The Senate can get them by passing the amendment and issuing a subpoena. But there's more. The same day Blair told Vought to hold up the aid, Michael Duffy, a political appointee at OMB who reports to Vought, emailed Deputy Undersecretary of Defense Elaine McCusker and told her that the president had questions about the aid. Duffy copied Mark Sandy, a career official at OMB, who told us about the email in his testimony before the House. Like all others, that email was not produced by the Trump administration in the House impeachment investigation. We know this email exists, however, because in response to a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, the Trump administration was forced to release a redacted email consistent with Sandy's description. But OMB provided none of those documents to the House. With this proposed amendment, the Senate has an opportunity to obtain and review the full record that could further demonstrate how and why the president was holding the aid. These documents would also shed light on the president's order to implement the hold. On July 3rd, the State Department told various officials that OMB blocked it from dispensing $141 million in aid. OMB had directed the State Department not to send a notification to Congress about spending the money. And without that notification, the aid was effectively blocked. Why did OMB block the congressional notification? Who told them to do it? What was the reason? The Senate would get those answers if it issued this subpoena. But there's more. On July 12th, Blair, the White House official who had called Vought on June 19th and said, quote, we need to hold it up, then sent an email to Duffy at OMB. Blair said, quote, the president is directing a hold on military support funding for Ukraine. We haven't seen this email. The only reason we know about it is from the testimony of Mark Sandy, the career OMB official who followed the law and complied with his subpoena. As you can see from the transcript excerpt in front of you, Sandy testified that the July 12th email did not mention concerns about any other country or any other aid packages, just Ukraine. So of the dozens of countries where we provide aid and support, the president was only concerned about one of them, Ukraine. Why? Well, we know why. But OMB has still refused to provide a copy of this July 12 email and has refused to provide any documents surrounding it, all because the president told OMB to continue to hide the truth from Congress and the American people. What was he afraid of? A subpoena issued by the Senate would show us. OMB also has documents about a key series of meetings triggered by the president's order to hold the military aid. In the second half of July, the National Security Council convened a series of interagency meetings about the president's hold on military aid. OMB documents would show what happened during those meetings. For example, on July 18th, the National Security Council staff convened a routine interagency meeting to discuss Ukraine policy. During the meeting, it was the OMB representative who announced that President Trump placed a hold on all military aid to Ukraine. Ambassador Bill Taylor, our most senior diplomat to Ukraine, participated in that meeting. And he described his reaction at his open hearing.
In a regular NSC secure video conference call on July 18th, I heard a staff person from the Office of Management and Budget say that there was a hold on security assistance to Ukraine, but could not say why. Toward the end of an otherwise normal meeting, a voice on the call, the person was off screen, said that she was from OMB and her boss had instructed her not to approve any additional spending on security assistance for Ukraine until further notice. I and others sat in astonishment. The Ukrainians were fighting Russians and counted on not only the training and weapons, but also the assurance of U.S. support. All that the OMB staff person said was that the directive had come from the president to the chief of staff to OMB. In an instant, I realized that one of the key pillars of our strong support for Ukraine was threatened.
It's hard to believe that OMB would not have any documents following this bombshell announcement. It surely does. It was the agency that delivered the shocking news to the rest of the U.S. government that the president was withholding the vital military aid from our partner. And we would see these documents if the Senate issued a subpoena. The July 18th meeting was just the first in a series of meetings where OMB held the line and enforced the president's hold on the aid. But there was a second meeting on July 23rd where we understood agencies raised concerns about the legality of OMB's hold on the aid. And then a third meeting at a more senior level on July 26th. Witnesses testified that at that meeting, OMB struggled to offer an explanation for the president's hold on the aid. And then a fourth meeting on July 31st, where the legal concerns about the hold were raised. At each of these meetings, there was confusion about the scope and the reasons for the hold. Nobody seemed to know what was going on. But that was exactly the point. All of the agencies, except OMB, which was simply conveying the president's order, supported the military aid and argued for lifting the hold. OMB did not produce a single document providing information about its participation, preparation, or follow-up from any of these meetings. Did these OMB officials come prepared with talking points for these meetings? Did OMB officials take notes during any of these meetings? Did they exchange emails about what was going on? Did OMB discuss what reasons they could give everyone else for the hold? By issuing this subpoena, the Senate can find out the answers to all of those questions and others like them. The American people deserve answers. OMB documents would also reveal key facts about what happened on July 25th. On July 25th, President Trump conducted his phone call with President Zelensky, during which he demanded a favor. This favor was for Ukraine to conduct an investigation to benefit the president's reelection campaign. That call was at 9 a.m. Just 90 minutes after President Trump hung up the phone, Duffy, the political appointee at OMB, who is in charge of national security programs, emailed DOD to, quote, formalize, end quote, the hold on the military aid. Just 90 minutes after President Trump's call, a call in which the president had asked for a favor. That email is on the screen in front of you. We have a redacted copy of this email because it was recently released through the Freedom of Information Act. It was not released by the Trump administration in response to the House's subpoena. In this email, Duffy told the DOD officials that based on the guidance he had received, they should, quote, hold off on any additional DOD obligations of these funds. He added that the request was, quote, sensitive, and that they should keep this information closely held, meaning, don't tell anybody about it. Why did Duffy consider the information sensitive? Why didn't he want anyone to learn about it? Answers to those questions may be found in OMB emails, emails that we could all see if you issue a subpoena. But there's more. Remember, the administration needed to create a way to stop funding that was already underway. The train had already left the station. And something like this had never been done before. Later in the evening of July 25th, OMB found a way. Even though DOD had already notified Congress that the funds would be released. Here is how the scheme worked. OMB sent DOD a funding document that included a carefully worded footnote directing DOD to hold off on spending the funds. Quote, to allow for an interagency process to determine the best use, end quote. Remember that language. To allow for an interagency process to determine the best use. Let me explain that. The footnote stated that this, quote, brief pause would not prevent DOD from spending the money by the end of the fiscal year, which was coming up on September 30th. OMB had to do this because it knew that not spending the money was illegal. And they knew that DOD would be worried about that. And they were right. DOD was worried about it. Mr. Sandy testified that in his 12 years of experience at OMB, he could not recall anything like this ever happening before. The drafting of this unusual funding document and the issuance of the document must have generated a significant amount of email traffic, memos, and other documentation at OMB. Memos, email traffic, and documentation that we would all see if the Senate issued a subpoena. So what was the result from the series of events on July 25th? Where was Mr. Duffy's guidance to implement the hold coming from? Why was the request sensitive? What was the connection between OMB's direction to DOD and the call President Trump had with President Zelensky just 90 minutes before? Did agency officials communicate about the questions coming from Ukrainian officials? The American people deserve answers. A subpoena would provide those answers. OMB documents also would reveal information about the decision to have a political appointee take over Ukraine funding responsibility.